up, everybody? Welcome to a very special edition of Fantasy Baseball Elite. No, this is not Ray and Jeff. These are your boys, Vlad Sedler and Peter Christensen, Roto Gut and Draft Sheet, here to talk a little draft strategy for you as we get a couple weeks out from the beginning of the Major League season. What's going on, Pete? How are you?
I'm good, man. Excited for this show and excited for baseball season. Right around the corner, it's, what is today, March 7th. So we've got essentially, you know, 2.5-3 weeks till opening day begins in earnest. And yeah, it's a very exciting time of year, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and to kick things off, I mean, the final drafts are happening the weekend, I guess, before baseball season starts, but they're also is going to be a series that's in a lot of formats going to be sort of like a cheat series between Oakland and Seattle, basically in Japan. So that'll give us a little taste, and we'll probably see a lot of players there that end up hitting home runs or having good games for the pitchers end up really boosting up an ADP that weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of like a free look, right? You get to see how those players do, and then you can kind of decide whether to put them in your week one lineup, I believe, is how that works. Those games, I think they're going to be on TV here in the States at like 3 a.m. or something like that. And I'm pretty sure I'll be up and watching.
Yeah, it's wild. And it'll be something like, you know, Mitch Haniger hits, you know, 2 home runs in a game, and all of a sudden the next day in the drafts, he's going like 30th overall instead of 80th because people just want to, you know, bank the free stat. So it'll be super interesting. But, you know, we wanted to go over really a whole bunch of topics. And if you guys like it, you know, we'd love to do this again for you. But just a little bit in terms of our backgrounds. I mean, starting with you, I mean, obviously, I think you're one of those people that doesn't really need to be introduced. And I think a lot of people listening today probably know about you. But first of all, you are, you know, in my opinion, at least, the king of Twitter. And then also one of the best high stakes DFS players in the game. And that's been for many years. I mean, you're one of the OGs, one of the first guys to get going. And then the most interesting thing to me is how you sort of transitioned that. Like, I know you played season long like everyone else did when we were younger, but you only recently, as of last year, jumped into some of the high stakes NFBC stuff. And I myself have been pretty impressed because you and I drafted a couple of leagues together. And I'm like, shit, there's Draft Sheet again. Like, he drafted this crazy team that I thought was going to suck. And obviously, I know he knows his stuff. But, like, dude, we're, like, fighting for first and second the whole way through the season. So, you know, just really impressive how you've kind of switched over from, you know, all of that. So just wanted to kind of intro that and have you talk about it.
Yeah, of course. You know, grew up playing just kind of the traditional, like, you know, season-long fantasy baseball. And then kind of didn't follow baseball for, I don't know, you know, 6-7 years kind of in my college years. And then DFS got me back into it. And now baseball is by far my favorite sport, my favorite, you know, DFS sport. And now really getting into the season long landscape. I played a few leagues last year and did pretty well. I think I learned a lot and some things I could improve on. And this year I've really kind of revamped my whole season long model. I've got custom projections for essentially every viable player in baseball, and excited to see how it goes. I've definitely got the season-long bug. I've got a few too many drafts on my NFBC page. It's going to be a busy Sunday afternoon/night getting those fabs in, but I'm certainly excited for the season, and I've certainly learned a lot from you. I've been, I know, peppering your phone with questions about players, about your process, because you've obviously had a huge amount of success in the NFBC, and certainly can bring it in the DFS landscape too. So we've kind of had a little bit of contrasting, you know, processes to get into fantasy baseball, the two aspects of it, season long and DFS. And we both had, you know, a huge amount of success in our respective landscapes, and it's good to get the crossover, and excited to, you know, keep working together on these two aspects of fantasy baseball.
Yeah, it's great, you know, for me especially, and to get somebody like yourself, you know, that's been successful in the DFS world. And it's funny how, you know, we kind of started from different beginnings, but all kind of converging into basically like just full on baseball. We're just going to be totally immersed this year, which is, you know, fantastic. You know, myself, I've been playing fantasy season long for, you know, 25 years. NFBC, the high stakes stuff, for the last 10 years. And I don't know, I just sort of, that grand master title, you know, the overall title is something that I'm still fighting for and looking for every year. I've come close a few times in the 12 team format. In the main event in Vegas, I've won my leagues basically each of the last 2 years. And then last year, partnering on the platinum team, that one's with a 15K entry, we ended up coming in second place. And this is where we had an absolutely, you know, abysmal pitching staff. Like, you know, Dennison Lamet, we lost in the very beginning. We had like ridiculously bad damage from Sonny Gray and Marcus Stroman. And basically we're just like grinding all year to try to pull out that second place. So this year, gunning for all the firsts, as like, as I'm sure you are. But diving into, I guess, a little bit of how we approach the off season. You know, some people really like to wait a little bit after the World Series, and obviously, you and I do some football content. You're very heavy into basketball as well, and so it's really tough to sort of, you know, jump back into baseball pretty much as soon as the previous baseball season ended. But I guess let's talk a little bit and let people know how we approach the season. I guess, when do you get started? What's sort of your, you know, without giving too much info about your model, because I know, you know, that's some, you know, some top secret shit, how you kind of go about getting ready for the preseason.
Yeah, so I kind of ramp up my baseball research. Essentially, you know, once the football season gets close to wrapping up, I would say kind of before the Super Bowl, you know, once the Super Bowl's all ready to go, there's not a lot of work to do for that game, at least from my perspective. So that's when I kind of got started this year. And, you know, I kind of started from the bottom up. I mentioned revamping my projection system for season long. And for me, you know, so much of what I do is based on my, you know, MLB DFS model, and kind of trying to convert that to a season long perspective. Obviously there's, you know, different components to season long projections than there are to DFS projections, but I think the process is somewhat similar in that for me, I want to break down, you know, every aspect of baseball that I can into the kind of the component parts, right? So obviously baseball is predicated on the pitcher batter matchup. And that's a huge thing for DFS, but you can kind of do that for season long too. So, you know, you're looking at a hitter and I'm breaking it down into as many, getting as granular as I can with it, and trying to project, you know, which players are going to improve, which players are going to regress in certain areas, you know, changes to, you know, maybe a player started pulling the ball more often, that can lead to more home runs, or they signed with a new park, and I'm trying to, you know, get every single park down to exact home run factors based on their, you know, their heat map of where they hit the ball, all those types of things. And of course, all the bigger picture stuff too, but that's the reason I love baseball so much, or at least a big part of it, is because there's just so much data to look into, especially with all the new StatCast stuff that's out there. So I feel pretty confident in my projections, at least, that they're going to, you know, outperform some of the systems out there, and excited to test it out, because this is really the first year that I've done kind of full-on custom projections for every single player. You know, you go to a site like Fangraphs.com, which we both love, there's tons of projections, publicly available projections out there. And I think I can beat them. And we'll find out.
Yeah. Everybody loves draft season in any sport, really, but there really is something magical about baseball, because it starts so early. I mean, people, you know, you and I are starting to jump into drafts in January. This is the first year that I actually started my first slow draft on NFBC, the 50 round draft and hold. I started that in December. And I think it really, you know, really helps sort of fine tune. And when you're starting your research early, it's important. This is, you know, these are, you know, leagues where we're drafting up to 450 players, and really understanding the player pool is important to be so deep. You know, I remember several years ago going to my first live main events in Vegas. I mean, it's a 30 round draft, 15 teams. And I remember, even though I really felt like I know you baseball really well, towards the end of the draft, man, I was struggling. And so, you know, this is one of the reasons why, for example, and I know you've done some of these as well, these slow drafts, I mean, whether it's on NFBC or anywhere else that you do them, I think are super important, because you really, first of all, it helps you really understand the player pool deeply, so that when you're in season and you've got free agent bidding or waiver wire decisions to make, you already have a good idea about each team's roster. You kind of know, you know how deep things are. You can kind of make your waiver wire decisions better. And it also helps you gauge ADP. It helps you figure out value. I mean, right. And there's just so much awesomeness about using slow drafts as a tool, as a guide for us, basically.
Yeah, no question. These draft champions leagues, they're called on the NFBC, 50 rounds. They're either like 2-hour or 4-hour pick clocks. They last literally weeks. And I had that same experience that you talked about. You know, I was obviously feeling pretty good for the first 25, 30 rounds. You start getting around like 41 and you're talking about, you know, like the 500th, 600th player off the board. And the pickings are slim, Vlad. There's not a lot of guys to look at, but you know, you have that like 2 hours to research. So you're really digging in to all these rosters. You're trying to figure out, you know, which teams are going to have maybe some impact bats come up in like August, right? Because that's kind of who you're looking at that stage of the draft. But it really does help you realize where your strengths and weaknesses are, and you know where you need to research more to kind of get ready. And you're right, you know, when that time of year comes around, and you know, kind of your traditional waiver wire leagues, your online championships or your main events, you know, you'll be more prepared to kind of know who could come up and possibly make an impact for your fantasy team.
Yeah. And to me, I mean, every new season, I mean, the draft board, like when you're starting a draft, it's pretty much like may sound silly, but we're like artists on an open canvas. And, you know, everything changes. Like as you're drafting, like, you know, say you're, you know, it's a 12 team and you're drafting at the end of the first round and you decide, hey, I'm going to start with DeGrom or Sale because I don't like the pitchers here, then that changes the decisions that you're making in every subsequent round. And you're basically, at least in roto leagues, trying to build for as much balance as you can. If you got your 5x5 standard categories, you know, you want to be able to have that balance. If they're individual, like closed leagues, some of these satellite leagues, or if it's your home leagues, yeah, maybe you can get away with punting. Say you missed your closers or whatever, and you say, hey, I'm going to punt save but crush everywhere else. Maybe that's something you could pull off. But in some of these contests that you and I play in, main event, online championship, draft champions, all on NFBC, I mean, there's an overall component to this. So I guess, how do you do this differently? I mean, are you drafting for more upside guys? Because a lot of these entries, they're like lottery tickets where, you know, we'd love to win our league, but you know, you and I, the real goal is we want the accolades of the grand prize and the money too, of course, 125K, 150K. So how much does your approach change with these games that have the overall component to it?
Yeah, with the leagues with the overall component, I actually treat them, you know, somewhat similar to a GPP, you know, in DFS, where a lot of the money, you know, in the entire prize pool goes to the first spot or the first few spots. You know, that we've got 100K up top, 150K up top, and then it's a big drop off after that. And you do get a prize for winning your league, but like as you mentioned, certainly the goal is to try to compete and win the overall prize. So just like a DFS GPP, you know, I'm drafting for upside for a lot of the time. So in the first, you know, few rounds, first 5-6 rounds, that's not quite as true, right? You're just trying to kind of nail the it's slim margins in the first round. I think there are a lot of guys you could make a case for. I have my preferences, certainly. I know you do. I mean, everyone should have their preferences, but that's not, for me, really where the draft is won. I think you can certainly lose it in those first 4, 5, 6 rounds, but I think it's pretty hard to win it. It's really won, you know, later down in the other drafts, and of course on the waiver wire in those leagues. And I think you agree with me on this that, you know, I don't want to draft pitchers that I'm certain can't really deliver a big season, right? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm drafting for a lot of upside. I'm trying to find breakout pitchers, breakout hitters, guys maybe that are, you know, maybe they're blocked by someone else, but they're super talented. And if they get the job, they could run with it. You know, pitchers who I've seen something, maybe an improvement in the second half of last year that I think they can build upon and deliver a big season. I'm trying not to get players that are just going to, you know, fill a roster spot, but I'm fairly certain based on their track record that they can't really deliver too much surplus value on their draft spot.
Yeah. So, I mean, similar to me in the early rounds, I basically just don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to land on the bus. And you know, it's, as it's been the case the last few years. I mean, if you look at, for example, the top 80 last year and the year before, I mean, the bust rate of these guys, and bust meaning somebody that not only doesn't earn value, but is a, you know, a few rounds away from value. I mean, it's close to 45-50%. So you're pretty much, you know, walking on eggshells trying to avoid those landmines early on. And you're right. Like a lot of these leagues, like these drafts, are won later on. I mean, you know, for me, for example, and I know it was similar to the case for you last year, like, you know, I wasn't all that big on Snell. So I kind of missed out on some. I got like maybe one share in the 18th round, but I was pounding a lot of, you know, Wilson Ramos, Miles Mikolas. I was getting everywhere in the 25th round. I know you were too. And then a whole bunch of Mitch Haniger. And so that really helped, like having a lot of those gems later on, those guys that really pop out, like both you and I have our projection systems. And there are guys I'm looking at where I'm seeing in the ADP, you know, they're going in the 12th round, but I have them as like a fourth round value. And so for me, and I know the case for you, that's kind of the name of the game, right? I mean, it's really looking at ADP, seeing what everyone else is doing and how our projection systems stack up to that. And basically finding that mispriced value and just pounding it, like just drafting teams when we can early and getting these guys that we know are going to outperform.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for the early rounds, I'm doing enough drafts this year where I'm not going to jump, you know, if you're in one or two leagues, I think it's a little bit different where maybe you want to kind of draft your guys. You can jump the ADPs, the average draft positions, significantly in the first few rounds if you want to. But if you play a bunch of leagues like you and I do, I'm comfortable kind of not following ADP to a T for the first two or three rounds, but I don't want to jump it too much because I do want to spread my exposure around a little bit. Like, you know, for me, say like Jose Altuve versus Alex Bregman. Like, I really, really like both guys this year.
Yep.
But I don't have I have them ranked very, very similarly. I think they're going to deliver value, and I think it's going to be similar value. And I don't have a strong preference between the two, right? So you do enough drafts and you kind of get exposure to both guys and you just kind of take them as they fall to you. You know, you can kind of do that for me, you know, Jacob deGrom versus Chris Sale. I'm doing enough drafts where, you know, if I get to pick, you know, 11 or 12, I generally don't take pitchers super early in drafts, but you know, when they fall far enough to me, I'll grab a share or two so that I have those guys on 10% of my teams or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really, sometimes it's like what falls to you at the draft. And you know, there's just sometimes there's a scenario where people are loading up on other positions and, you know, there's somebody good that you've been waiting on that ends up falling to you. Just kind of, you know, you jump it where you can. But I'm sort of the same. And, you know, I basically take what the draft gives me because I'm doing several teams. I'm able to mix it up. Like in each sort of grouping or each round or tier, I kind of have my targets. There's always the guys that I'm not really interested in, but if they fall far enough, like, you know, maybe I would take them. Like for me, for example, someone like that is David Price this year. He's just not somebody I love at all at his ADP, but at some point there will become a price that he's worth it to me. And I can't really decide that until I'm in the draft. And it also depends, do I need a starting pitcher at that point? Who are the other options in the starting pitcher position? Do I want to maybe, you know, bump up a Pivetta around because I like him more than Price? It's, you know, these type of decisions that we're making. And the same thing, like you were saying about using ADP basically as a guide and not jumping too far ahead, because sometimes you're sucking the value out of everything. Like if you really, like I know you really love Adalberto Mondesi, but I know you're not going to take him, you know, at the, you know, the 1-2 turn because you know you have a good shot at him at the 3-4 turn, right?
Exactly. And, you know, even if you think Mondesi could, you know, outperform some of those players, you know, picked around pick 15 or 16, like I've got him ranked higher than that. I think he's going to be fantastic this year, but you're right. You kind of kill the value of him if you take him up that far, because he's, you know, unlikely to, you know, outperform that draft slot by too much. And then you also miss out on a player that you could have taken there, right? Like, I'm not going to pass on Alex Bregman over Mondesi, even if I've got them ranked similarly, because I want to get both of them and I can get Mondesi a little bit later. So you've got to be patient on your guys to some degree, especially in my opinion, early on in the draft. But, you know, once you get past pick, I don't know, 150, at that point, I'm pretty much mostly just taking kind of my best player available.
Yeah, and I think that's always the best thing. I think a big mistake that people make is they are looking at ADP, and you can notice this in drafts, a little bit too closely and are afraid to jump their guys. So what ends up happening is they're following it really closely, while a lot of the sharp drafters have thrown ADP out the window after like 150, 200 overall, and they're just getting the guys that they like. Because at that point, it's just this big hodgepodge of all these players. And, you know, I mean, hey, if you love Jeff McNeil and, you know, you don't want to, I mean, you don't have to take him. Obviously, you're not taking him in the 10th round. But if you know he's a 25th round guy, you absolutely have to have him, then, hey, you grab him in the 22nd. So as far as like draft slot and sort of where you prefer, luckily in NFBC, we sort of have that option where we have the KDS, which is the Kentucky Derby style system, where basically we're getting to somewhat decide where we want to draft from. So we put our order in a 15 teamer, for example, from 1 to 15, and we can mix those numbers around based on where we want to draft. And then that is chosen, like basically, you know, drawn from this automatic system where if you're, you know, you want the first pick and you're the first one chosen, then you get your first pick. Say you had 15 first. If you're chosen first, you get 15 first. So we have somewhat a little bit of control, but not completely, especially if everybody wants that one pick. So my question to you is, where do you love to draft from these days? I mean, you've got the middle range, you've got a lot of value there at the end, or do you absolutely want to start in a 15 teamer with a Trout or Betts? And basically, are you happy with what you would get at that 30, 31, round two, round three turn?
Yeah. So for me, Trout and Betts are clearly the best two players to draft in fantasy baseball in 2019. I've got them projected quite a ways ahead of every other hitter. And I certainly do prefer to go with the hitter in the first round. So you mentioned the Kentucky Derby settings in NFBC or wherever you guys do your drafts, if they have that. I always leave it just 1-2 as my first two choices. And then, you know, if I get pick one, I take Trout. If I get pick two, I take Mookie Betts or Trout if the first person goes Betts, which we have seen more and more often, in my opinion, that has happened actually this season. It'll be interesting if that trend continues throughout the rest of draft season. But yeah, so those are my first two choices. There's plenty of, you know, whether you're in a 12-teamer, a 15-teamer, a 10-teamer, there's plenty of good players at that 2-3 turn if you take Trout or Betts first. So that's my preference. And then if I don't get those two, I usually have actually toward the back end of the first round as my preference. Usually, you know, pick 10, 11, 12 are my kind of third and fourth choices because I think there is kind of a big glob of talent, you know, after Trout and Betts. For me, you know, even the three big pitchers that are essentially off the first off the board in every single draft, and that's Scherzer, DeGrom, and Sale, you know, I've got all three of those guys pretty close together. So I'm not really getting much Max Scherzer because he is almost always the first guy off the board. I wouldn't want to take him at pick 4 or 5, which you kind of typically have to do to get him. So I have no issue, you know, taking a DeGrom or Sale at the back end, or even, you know, the back end of the first or start of the second. And then generally I'm taking two hitters, you know, at the back end of the first and the start of the second round, generally, you know, two guys like a Bregman, Altuve, you know, you can get Giancarlo Stanton or Judge or Bryce Harper down there. So that's typically my approach, is to draft either first or second or in the back half of the first round. Where are you typically setting your KDS settings to get your optimal draft slot?
I'm on the same page with you as far as 1 and 2 are concerned, and that's, I don't really play 10 teamers outside of the cut lines, which I know you did a couple of last night. But you know, one in 12 and 15s, I would really love a 1 or 2 pick. I think I can do enough in the second and third round to really get some guys in that tier that I still like and can target. But the one thing I've been, the one drum I've sort of been beating is I don't really want a 3, 4, or 5 pick. I usually put those towards the end. And that's really because I don't have a true certifiable number 3. And I've gone over this so much, you know, so much. I mean, if I was forced to pick 3 at this point, it changes every week. But now that might be JD Martinez just because he's so solid. But to me, the JD Martinez, Turner, Yelich, Jose Ramirez, Acuna, they're all sort of similar. I'd be happy with any of those guys. That's why having a pick a little bit later, like a, you know, mid round 7 or 8, I'm totally happy with, because what that means is I'm now getting an earlier second round pick. And so I think the best thing that people can do is basically you want to project out and sort of almost write out those first few rounds and figure out what players you like. You figure out what players go in what range, since it's a snake draft format, and figure out what works best for you. I know other people sometimes set it based upon, you know, where they think they can get their pitchers. If you have a certain tier where, you know, you, the absolute last pitcher that you would take as your number one is, you know, like the Bueller Carrasco, that group that usually goes around 30 to 35, and Syndergaard, if that's your last guy, then you have to sort of set up to make sure you're at least getting one of those pitchers in your first three rounds. Maybe there are other people that feel so confident with the pitcher pool later on with all these up and coming guys that, hey, maybe you're fine with Paxton or Corbin or Greinke as your number one. Hey, that's fine. You know, to each their own, you can set it up your way. You know, but to me, usually, at least in the NFBC formats with the overall prize, I want to make sure I get a good arm. And so I'm sort of looking at those first few rounds. I don't have to take the Scherzer in early first. I usually don't take a pitcher in the first round. But I at least want to have some idea and some setup of where I want to take those pitchers.
Yeah, I think all good points there. And, you know, we've talked plenty in the past. I am more comfortable waiting pretty long on pitcher. I do like to get one of those big arms. Trevor Bauer, who we're both very high on, is typically the first pitcher I take if I can get him. And then even if I don't, if I miss on him, I'm comfortable waiting a little bit longer. I do think, you know, just from so much DFS over the years, and pitching is really where I think my strength is. I remember last year when I was kind of first jumping into these drafts, and you were like, bro, you're going to need some pitching at some point. I was like, ah, there's some guys in the later half that I like. And so, you know, that's just kind of goes to strategy is, you know, where do you think your individual strength is? And for me, I think it's finding value late in drafts at starting pitcher. And then even, you know, every team, like last year, there was just so many guys on the waiver wire that I wanted to pick up and stream. And if I have all of these, you know, if I use all my draft capital, my early round picks on starting pitcher, those kind of, then those slots are kind of locked up. Yeah. Where I can't stream these pitchers that I think have value. So I do really go, frankly, pretty extreme hitter heavy early, where, you know, through 10 rounds, I typically have, I would say, 2 pitchers at the most.
Yeah, you know, it's hilarious because, you know, I just got to tell everybody the story is, so last year you're like, hey, I'm going to, you know, jump in this draft. And, you know, usually friends don't play against each other. People, you know, you try to find leagues with, you know, people that you don't know because you want a better shot at the overall title. And you're like, oh yeah, I'll jump into your league. I'm like, okay. And, you know, we started drafting and I remember it's like through round 10 and you still don't have any pitchers. And I'm like, dude, I don't think you understand. I know you're like the DFS god and know what you're doing and can stream pitchers, but like, dude, you're going to need some pitchers. Like, this is a totally different format. I don't think it's going to work. And it was a great lesson for me because for you, it did. We ended up being in the same 2 12 teamers together, the online championships. And I was first in one, you were first in the other, and we were second in those leagues. And in both of those leagues, you basically waited and then you pounded all the Snells and Nicholases and Pivettas, and you had all those guys. And then I saw you streaming like crazy during the season. Like, you know, I was like, you know, I'm like, I need this pitcher. I have enough fab. I'm going to get it. And then boom, there goes Pete for like $100. I'm like, oh, so much for getting that pitcher. And so it was a kind of a good lesson for me. And that's the beauty of this is every year we're learning more and we're figuring out that there's not just one, you know, standard way to go about drafting.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, just one kind of strategy slash projection lesson that we've talked about. You know, I consume a lot of fantasy baseball content at this time of year, just because I'm like so obsessed with it. You know, some of it, in my opinion, is somewhat lacking on the analysis portion. I don't always agree, but I just like to get everyone's opinion. And sometimes, you know, people can point out things that I miss and I go research it for myself. And sometimes it proves true, sometimes it doesn't, but either way, it can be a good lesson there. But you'll see a lot of people talk about innings projections for starting pitchers. And I think that's a very, very overrated stat. Like, I think the prevailing logic is, oh, well, you got to, you know, starting pitchers are going fewer and fewer innings, making fewer and fewer starts. You got to get the guys that are projected for a lot of innings. And I agree to the extent that it's important to get pitchers that throw a lot of innings per start, right? Because you want them to go deep in the games. Because if they're on your starters for the week, you get a better chance of win, strikeouts, all that stuff. But in terms of looking at pitchers, oh, this guy might get injured. He hasn't been very durable in the past. That's obviously means something. But for me, your rosters are going to churn, right? If you're in a 12-team online championship, I mean, the team that you draft, you're going to end up with, I wonder what the average is. I don't know, 12 of those guys at the end of the year, something like that. And the rest, people are going to get hurt. You're going to have to drop them. You're going to find guys on the waiver wire that are better. So I'm not, as long as the pitcher is kind of healthy, now coming into the season, I'm not super worried that they're going to go down at some point in the year. I want the production, right off the bat, get off to that hot start.
Yeah, I mean, and you're just looking alone at some of the trends in baseball. I mean, we've seen it with closers, with so many major league teams going into a closer by committee situation, not wanting to name a closer. And with starting pitchers, I mean, you're seeing a lot of the middle relievers come in earlier in games. We saw a lot of it last year. We saw the trend with the opener. But just looking alone at, for example, number of starting pitchers that have amassed 200-plus innings, that's a dying breed. So last season, there were only 13 of those guys that ended up going 200-plus. Going back to just a few years ago, 2015, there were almost 25 of those guys. And a lot of these guys were people that you don't necessarily want to get the innings of a full season from. I mean, this is a 4 ERA from Julio Teheran. There was some Edison Volquez, some James Shields, which is just disgusting, Jordan Zimmermann. So, it's the quality innings. They matter so much. And this is where streaming really, really comes into it. And I know that's something that you've had a lot of success with.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually think those middle relievers are becoming more and more viable. The super talented ones, and I actually built a kind of a reliever projection system that I basically have every reliever ranked based on skills. So there are some guys where I think, you're better off getting, 3 really high quality innings out of a Ryan Pressly, who's my number one ranked middle reliever this year. And you are starting some trash can that's going to get blown up and kill your ERA and whip and, not get a win anyway. So I do think with the trends in baseball, those middle relievers that aren't even closers become more viable. And, a lot of those guys they're used in super high leverage situations. So they're going to get, 6, 7, 8 wins anyway, if they're super good. And then they've got a chance to get into that closer role because they're super, super talented. And, if anything happens to the closer, whether that's injury, underperformance, whatever, then they've got a chance to become extremely valuable. If you can get, one of the best relievers in baseball, you get him basically for free at the end of your draft. He helps you out when your starters have tough matchups or whatever it may be. And then, all of a sudden, at some point in the year, the closer goes on the DL and you've got yourself an extremely valuable pick. So I do think those super talented, effective middle relievers are becoming more and more viable in season-long fantasy baseball.
Yeah, and a lot of it, I think, also and it sort of segues into our final topic here, talking about mid and middle and late round strategy, is a lot of these middle relievers, I mean, you kind of want to use them wisely because, hey, you may have a decent pitcher, a starting pitcher with 2 good starts in Miami and some other good park that you may want to use. And it also depends on where you are category wise. Say you're in the middle of July and you're hurting in ERA and WHIP. And so, utilizing your Ryan Pressly type or somebody that can get you a couple innings is really valuable to your team. You'll get some strikeouts, probably not getting a shot at a win. As long as you don't have too many of those middle relievers in your lineup at that time, it's a good thing. So you're always looking for that balance. You're looking at the category standings and seeing, hey, what do I need? Okay, so my team is built where it's really strong in strikeouts and wins. So maybe I can utilize some of these guys to help bring my ratios down a little bit.
Yeah, no question. You got to, be cognizant of where you are in the standings, especially as you get into, kind of the July, August, September, and where you can gain points and then not lose points, right? So if you're up by, 8 starting eight pitcher wins on the next closest guy behind you. But you could gain points in WHIP or ERA if you can, you know, just improve those just a little bit over the next couple of weeks. And that's the time when you could roll out some of those middle relievers.
Yeah, and we kind of touched on it earlier, like, you know, in these overall competitions and in general, I mean, we're kind of drafting for more upside later. The one thing that I've written about that you and I always warn people about is you know, with when you have a short bench, when you just have like, you know, seven guys there, you don't want to overload with stashes. It's one of the first lessons I learned in the NFBC format. If you are loading up on all the, you know, like we talked about yesterday, we love, you know, Tyler O'Neill, for example, but he doesn't have a certified job yet. If you have, say, your fourth round, you got Vlad Guerrero, then later on you get Tyler O'Neill, then you pick up somebody like
Eloy Jimenez, any of the rookies that are going to come up. Yeah,
you load those guys up, and then you grab, then you have like somebody you're waiting to come back from injury, like Miguel Sano. All of a sudden, you've got three stashes on your team, and you don't have the flexibility in your roster to put somebody in, you know, for the weekend, where at NFBC you can make the switches twice a week. So on Friday, you know, the name of the game is basically to avoid taking the zeros. And so if you have somebody that you could pop in for the weekend, it's a really good thing. And this is where like the platoon split matchup guys come in. I mean, you know, Robbie Grossman's a poor example of that. That's like maybe if you're playing a 20 team league, but he's somebody that has strong splits against one side of the plate. Maybe a better example might be like a Jake Lamb or a Justin Bour, guys that may not be playing every day, but they're lefty mashers, or they're righty mashers. They're left-handed hitters that when you see a few righties coming up in their upcoming schedule, that's a perfect time to grab them, especially if they're playing in Coors or they're playing in Yankee Stadium or something like that. These are the type of guys that are difference makers, as opposed to just sort of being on autopilot and just playing whoever you think is the best player in your lineup.
Yeah, no doubt. Guys like Daniel Palka for the White Sox, maybe he's got a weekend series in Baltimore, right, where he's just going to get to face a bunch of those Orioles right-handed starters, a Ryan O'Hearn for Kansas City, someone like that, where, yeah, they are a huge power threat, but, like, they might not even play against left-handed starters starting pitching. And even if they do, you don't really want the probable 0-for-4 that could come from that. So I think from what I've experienced, and you've been at this way longer than I have from a seasonal perspective, people don't play matchups enough in seasonal fantasy baseball. I mean, part of the reason I love having a deep pitching staff of talented guys that I like is playing the matchups. You know, it matters a lot, and I think coming from a more of a DFS background, I think I'm kind of well versed in that. And from what I've seen, people are just like, oh, I'm just rolling out, you know, playing my, my top nine pitchers, no matter who they're facing, and same starting lineup every week. And for me, I'm getting pretty into the matchups and trying to roll out the best team every week that I possibly can.
Yeah, and it's a tough sort of nuancing as you go along through the season, and that's why you got to be really confident in the pitchers that you're drafting. Like, for example, you know, in this last 12-teamer I did a few days ago, I ended up grabbing Madison Bumgarner as my third starter, and it was because he was about 20 picks past his ADP. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have a Bumgarner share, even though I'm not fully on board. But, like, during the course of the year, like, there could be a very good opportunity, you know, possibility that I'm looking at, like, hey, I've got my ninth starting pitcher is Brad Keller. He's got a decent two-start week, and so I'm now at a position where I'm looking at my sort of bottom guys over one of my top guys. And that's why it's so important that you're actually drafting pitchers that you like, that you know you're going to use. And it also makes it tough for guys that pitch, like in the, you know, guys that start out of the AL East or guys that pitch in Colorado outside of your boy Marquez, where, you know, you may not want to even play them for just like a random single.
Yeah, no question. Bumgar is a great example of that, where, you know, his home starts are pretty damn valuable, but, you know, he's going to Coors Field. It's a big no thanks for me on Madison Bumgarner. So you will have to manage him. And, you know, some people don't like to do that as much. And I would say, you know, you can kind of draft accordingly, according to your style a little bit. And you know, maybe you don't draft as many kind of platoon guys or pitchers that you need to manage. So, again, you know your strengths and weaknesses and kind of tailor your draft to fit those strengths.
Yeah. So the final thing I wanted to talk to you about were just like some of the categories in general, because for me, at least over the years, there are a couple of categories that I feel that are, you know, have always been sort of underrated. I know for me, one weakness that I've always had that I've been mindful of and try to work on is WIP. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, oftentimes I'm, you know, I'm taking one starter in the first few rounds, and then my, like, you know, two and three aren't really aces. And so, you know, when you don't have that guy that really, you know, hold down your ratios, like the guys that have, you know, ERAs, I'm sorry, WHIPs under one, you know, the Snells and Greinke's and all these guys, you know, DeGroms of the world, you're playing with fire sometimes. So for me, WHIP is something I'm always really cognizant of. But I also know that average and the runs categories are also, it's not something people are always drafting for power. They're drafting for stolen bases. They're drafting for strikeouts. But average is something that, like, you know, you can end up with, if you're not careful with, you know, like the Adam Dunns of the world. You've got Zunino and Jay Bruce and Miguel Sano, and you've got all this power because you didn't get power early. And now you're kind of suffering because you have all these guys that are just, you know, sucking, pulling down your average. And then similar with runs, you know, runs is, you know, people are looking more at RBIs as opposed to runs. That's also important. So I think having, you know, kind of looking at your lineup as you draft and seeing, like, okay, I have a bunch of 3, 4, 5 hitters. Where are my ones and twos? Because that's going to affect stolen bases. That's going to affect runs.
Yeah. I've got a pretty strong opinion that I think average in particular is super underrated in drafts, like along with, you know, kind of building out my season long custom projections. I've also done a lot of work on valuation, and in which, you know, which categories are undervalued, and kind of combining those two numbers, like my projections for a player, and then, you know, how much will those numbers for each category help me in the end in the standings, and what I've found, and I think I'm right about this. We'll see this season, is that average is just severely undervalued. If you look at, like, if you look at the, you know, the end of the season standings for your typical 12-team league, right? So everyone's average is going to be, like, unless someone's punting batting average, which is, you know, maybe a topic for a different day. You know, people's batting season-long end of season batting average is going to be, like, between, like, 260 and, like, 285, right, is going to be the winner, something like that. And you basically need, you know, like, 3 or 4 points in batting average to move up, you know, one standing point or whatever, you know, to go from 7th to 6th, you typically need 3 or 4 points of batting average, which is not a lot. And so I think people, you know, you're looking at, like, home runs, you need, I think it's like 6 or 7 to typically move up one spot in home runs. And so, you know, a player projected for, you know, 32 home runs compared to 20, that's a big difference in projections. And then, you know, people certainly weigh that 32 home run player much higher than the 20 home run guy. But, you know, a hitter that you've got projected for 285 compared to 270,
yep,
does actually more in the standings for you. And people will say, oh, well, that, you know, it is harder to project batting average, you know, player to player. But if you're projecting every player, you know, your hits and misses are going to kind of even out there, and you should, you know, if you're good at what you're doing, come close to nailing your team batting average. And so I love the high average guys. I mean, I've got, you know, these guys like Altuve and Bregman and all these dudes, Lorenzo Cain, that are projected to hit for high averages. I've got them rated higher than their ADPs in general.
Yeah. And you see that because you know that if you're in drafting at the end of the first round and you grab a Bryce Harper, you grab a Giancarlo Stanton, you're getting a lot of production in like 3 solid categories, but batting average, you just don't know. I mean, it's just really volatile for so many of these players from year to year for guys like that. But when you're drafting for average early and, you know, you do have a nice anchor there, like with an Altuve or Bats or somebody, like, that allows you to kind of, you know, go off the rails in terms of maybe chasing some power guys who might not have as good of an average later on, and vice versa. If you don't have that power, if you don't have that average early, you're looking for those guys that may not have a lot of power, but just make really good contact, have low strikeout rates, really good plate discipline. And, you know, it's a lot of the guys in the Astros. I mean, guys like Michael Brantley, Yuli Gurriel, like these are good guys to be able to grab later for you that could really help your batting average.
Yeah, the Astros in general, I think, are going to have a pretty big season with the bats. I've got a couple of teams that are essentially an Astros like 1 through 5 stack.
Love it, dude. Love it. Love it. Love it. I did the same thing in an online where I have Correa, Bregman. No, I'm sorry, Altuve, Correa, and Brantley. And I'm totally happy with that. I think that's and that's something that works too in some of these overall competitions. Like, you know, where is the value in terms of, you know, players or teams that you really like to be able to step it up this year? Like, you know, I mean, you know, we're targeting Colorado. I mean, there's players later on, like maybe a Hampson or a McMahon or a Desmond, even in, you know, 100 to 150. I mean, I don't necessarily like Desmond, but I'm saying is there are teams where you know that it's good for the offense. And if you can find some of these teams, like a couple of years ago, I remember it was the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, there were guys like Peralta you could get after the 20th round. At the time, Yasmani Tomas was good. Jake Lamb was a value. I mean, like, this is, you know, pre-Humidor time, but there was, you know, there's always every year, if you're able to identify those teams that you can get good players hitting 2, 4, or 5 in the lineup, I mean, it's really, really advantageous for your fantasy team.
Yeah. It's not quite the same as football because they're not quite as correlated, but, you know, if you can get the breakout team, like obviously last year, if you drafted, you know, outside of Kareem Hunt, if you went with, you know, Mahomes and Kelsey and Tyreek Hill, like you could get them all and you would have had a tremendous season. And I think baseball, not quite as correlated, but there's certainly something there. And like with the Astros, you can go, you know, Bregman, Altuve, if you drafted the back half of the first round, you can get Carlos Correa, who I think we both like to have a big bounce back year around what, pick 40 or 50, I think he's going now. Springer's around that area. And then Michael Brantley is going like pick 90. So all of a sudden, you've got their top five. Those guys are going to play almost every day. We think, you know, Altuve was battling through that knee injury last year. Bregman, I think he's my, you know, my bold prediction AL MVP candidate. You just got upside all over the place. So the Astros are one team I think you can do that with. And then one under the radar team I think is the Twins, who for me are a possible breakout offense. Pumping the brakes a little bit on that because Miguel Sano is going to miss a month with a weird like heel laceration injury. But, you know, Byron Buxton, a perennial breakout candidate pick. You've got Nelson Cruz joining the team. Jorge Polanco, I think, has some sneaky upside. Max Kepler, a guy that I could see breaking out, looks like, you know, he's going to bat some leadoff against right-handed pitchers. So if you can identify teams that have, you know, kind of everyday regulars and you see a bunch of guys that are potential breakout candidates, I think it's fun to draft a team kind of based around that story.
Yep, absolutely. Any last topics here before we jump out and get this one out to the airwaves for everybody?
No, I think that's a good start for our first little pod here. But yeah, we'll be back, and you know, we didn't do a ton of player analysis or picks today, but certainly that's something that we could do down the road.
Absolutely. So keep an eye out for this. Definitely not our last one. So thank you all for listening today. Hope you enjoyed it and got something out of it. This is the Fantasy Baseball Elite Podcast. Vlad Sedler and Peter Christensen wishing you guys lots of luck in your drafts. Take care.